Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
So thank you very much for everyone who is joining me in this lecture. This is a topic that's very close to my heart. So I'm just very happy to share with you. And the setting here at my little Airbnb apartment requires some flexibility on your behalf and my behalf, which is actually very good because essentially interception is about adaptive behavior. So I think it's just working out beautifully. Now, I want to tell you, or maybe I'm telling myself, maybe more to the point, what we're going to do in the next 50 minutes. So I'll start with a 20-minute interactive lectures where we move from interception to ways on how to train kinesthetic intelligence and then to embody it, because it's about embodiment. We will do a movement session that I think is really delicious. So that will be about 20 to 25 minutes. And then I will do my best to leave 5 minutes for questions at the end. Now, before I get started, I want to give some credit. The information I included in these interactive lectures stems from many sources, including my own experience. However, the theoretical part about interception is largely based on the work of Dr. Bud Craik and his insightful book, How Do You Feel an Interceptive Moment with Your Neurobiological Self? If this topic is of greater interest to you, I definitely recommend looking into Dr. Craik's work. Now, as I'm speaking, keep in mind that what I'm telling you is a translation of science-based information. It's not a one-to-one reflection of someone else's work or scientific research. And all of the practical applications stem from my own understanding and experience. Therefore, I highly encourage you to always question, rethink, and then reinterpret so it sits well with you. Now, before I'm talking, or I will keep talking, but before I tell you my take on interception, I want to ask you a few questions, and then I leave a few seconds after each question so you can either ponder the answer or the question if you like, which I think is equally useful. So, how do you know that you are alive?
Maybe you can also type answers in the chat.
Yeah, why not? That would be awesome, actually. And how do you know that you are you? And are you certain about it? Very nice. I'll make an assumption. I'm breathing. Excellent. I'm never sure. Me neither. I like it. Excellent. So let me post the next one. This is very good. So let me ask the next question. Why do you sometimes feel heavy or light? although your actual body weight hasn't changed. I hope I can keep all these fatigue. Yes, I cannot keep all these answers. Wow. Okay, this is really good. So I don't, maybe some of them are really true. So mine is actually a bit simpler here. So what motivates you to put on a jacket when you're cold? Need for warmth, exactly. Discomfort, very good. Pain, yes. Now we're in the realms of how I'm feeling. Shivering, so now we're in the realms of interception from the skin down to the fascia and then into the organ system or the visceral system. And then one more question I want to ask, why does it seem easier to read other people's emotional states when you're in tune with your own receptor stimuli? Very good, Vicky, excellent. You probably read the book too. Mirror neurons. The question, why does it seem easier to read other people's emotional states when you're in tune with your own, when you're recognizing your own emotional state, sensitivity? Yeah. Maybe question of boundaries, yes. So everything you said, or most of what you said there is, I can completely relate. And part of the answer to all of it is interception. So the interceptive sense really informs you that you're alive. It keeps you alive in part. It informs you that you're alive. It enables you to recognize yourself and be reasonably clear about it. It motivates you to change your behavior so you maintain your physiological well-being. Therefore, you put on a jacket when you feel cold. And then it also strengthens your empathy, because if you recognize your own emotional states more clearly, you can recognize it in others also more clearly. Interception can be described as, okay, I'm saying this slowly because it took me a while to wrap my head around it myself. So interception can be described as the moment-to-moment process in which the sensations of the body are felt and integrated. Through this process, we evaluate and emotionally respond to how we feel. Now, besides that, your interoceptive sense regulates homeostasis, which is the ongoing process that maintains the vitality of your body. Because of this, you feel alive. And then consciously or unconsciously, interoception guides your behaviors and choice making, as well as it influences your interaction with others and also your perception of time. Interception also facilitates subjective awareness of emotional feelings by creating a sensory image of the condition of the body in which the emergent bodily feelings provide the basis for self-awareness. In this way, it shapes your experienced body image and therefore the perception of the material self, as well as the sentient self and your sense of wholeness. So let me explain this a little bit more clearly. Some people are very clear about their material self, about their body. So they feel their body with great clarity. However, they are not so clear about their emotional states. And then other people are very much in tune and clear about their emotional states, but maybe not as sharp in the perception of their physical self. For me, interoception can unite the two. So I have a balanced perception of myself as a physical being and also as an emotional being. Now, the sense of wholeness is most easily explained by the opposite, a sense of disconnection. When extreme, it means that a part of the body is rejected to the point where a person wishes to have that part of the body removed. Now, much less severe, but also much more common, are areas of sensory motor amnesia, or blind spots, as we call them. Blind spots are part of the body that are no longer felt, which can lead to all sorts of problems. For example, movement dysfunctions or the inability to move a part of the body because you can't sense it anymore consciously or unconsciously. Now, interoceptive awareness supports reconnecting and functionally reintegrating all parts of the body to facilitate a sense of connectedness and therefore unity. So let me sum this up for you. The interoceptive sense facilitates staying alive, feeling alive, recognizing all aspects of what it means to be you, or for me.
Thank you.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Good. Sorry, I received the Google meeting link.
That is interesting. I'm so glad you're here, Olivier.
Okay, so sorry. Are there still people in the room?
There are a few, wait. Yes. Would you like to upgrade some people too, so that you can see them? They won't be visible.
Yeah, maybe that's nicer.
Yeah, so you can see under attendees who's here. Is there anyone there that would like to be on video with us? Eres.
Hi, Eres. Good, he helped me to get on again.
Yeah, thank you.
So I guess I'll start right away.
I will start with the that's Facebook okay. Live now.
Yeah. If you can get that going, that's wonderful, Trea. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Olivier.
I'm sharing my screen. Everybody can see it?
Yes.
Okay, very good. If I put it large, it's visible. Good. So I will get to it right away. My name is Olivier Goedgeluk. I'm for the past 10 years, I've had a concept in Belgium called Elite Athletes, with which we organize basketball camps, coaches workshops. We have started one of the first movement facilities in Belgium about 9 years ago. And added to that, for the past 5 years, I've been studying under Joseph and Linda of Fighting Monkey Practice. And I've been trying to integrate these teachings that I received from them in the area of youth athletic performance. And this is something that Rafe asked me to present about. So my role within this academy, within the basketball club that we have started 3 years ago, is the play perform director. So usually the name that you get as one of these kind of athletic coaches is the athletic director or the performance director, but I decided to change this name to the play perform director to help the kids to find this balance between play and performance. And one thing I would like to start with is the paradox of performing, which came up through a question of one of the players we have, Deacon. He came to me and he's one of our hardest workers. So he's one of the guys who is taking extra shots, coming to the gym before he goes to school to work on his strength or on his movement. So he's the one who's working the hardest. And he asks me, Coach, how come I'm working the hardest throughout the season? I'm putting in all of the extra hours. And then you have these other players in the club who are not working so hard, but they are actually playing better. And they're able to be more relaxed in the game. They're able more to be present in the game. So I feel like my recipe of working hard all the time, it's not really working. So he felt he was too much in this constant performance mind state through which he could not really play so well in the actual game. So in the player notebook, so I can show you to you here. This is one of the little books that all of the players get, which is a book through which they can introspect, a book through which they can have a little bit of an outline to do feedback on themselves after training, after playing games. And so this slide that was in the book, this was inspired by this conversation with the player. And on the left side, you see hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard, which is one of these typical sports quotes that often we just take as an absolute truth. And I actually remember hanging this quote in the closet of my brother when he was training to become a professional player, because I put it in a red font, and I really believe that this was an important quote for him, because he was the talented one and I was the hard worker. So I felt like, okay, he can have the chance. I'm also too short to be a professional player. He can have the chance to become a professional basketball player, but he doesn't have the habits yet. So he needs to work maybe a little bit harder, and maybe seeing the quote when he takes his sports gear, it will inspire him. But now I came to this meeting with the Deacon, with one of our young under 17 players. He's 16 years old. And he was following that recipe, but for him it was not working, because he was too tense during the game. He could not relax into it. And then the guys who were actually training less hard, who were not really pushing themselves, they were performing better than this guy who was going at it all the time. So I turned it around, and I also don't say it's an absolute truth, but I said, talent beats hard work when hard work can only work hard. So when the hard worker cannot shut off and relax a little bit into it, he cannot really react rhythmically and observantly to the pressures of the game or the actual situations of the game. And for me, this is one of the ways of reasoning that I learned also through myself, investing myself in the practice of fighting monkey. And Joseph, he will also be speaking at this conference, is to be able to change rhythms, or to be able to understand your own typical go-to rhythm, your way of doing things. And instead of always going into this automatic mode, to be able to actually return to this, and this we call in Fighting Monkey, this zero, this moment, this place, or this space from within yourself, from which you experience reality. And instead of always going in the same way, you try to find new ways, you try to find better habits. So Fighting Monkey for me, this is my personal individual practice, and that's how it started for me. I was a bit bored with this hard way of training. I was always in sports, in this competitive environment, winning or losing, scoring more points, this very more yang environment. And then I entered this space. I remember going to Brussels to a dance school. Parts. One of my friends was studying there, and she still had the key to the space. And she said, "You have to meet these guys from Fighting Monkey. Joseph used to play basketball. You would love this practice. It's very intense." And so I entered the room, and Joseph is there. We had I once had chatted with him before, and he said, "Ah, you're the basketball guy. You have to join the practice." So I joined this practice with like 40 dancers working with the practice ball, the ball on the string that you see here. And after, I think I joined them for maybe 30 minutes. I had a finger in my eye. I had a blue eye. I had blisters on my feet. Afterwards, I heard that Joseph called me the Tin Man, that I moved like a robot, like a strong man. Yeah. So there I realized something, that the way I was training my body after my experience in sports, that it maybe was not so beneficial for my long-term health, but also I really enjoyed the practice. Even though I was beat up, I really loved it, and I also enjoyed going into these expanding motions with my arms. And so yeah, I fell in love with this practice for me personally, and then I started to rethink how can I do this athletic development role that I have in my gym in Antwerp, in my academy in Antwerp. How can I make it a little bit more interesting? So I went from a practice that was mostly based in strength training. So the most conventional way in looking at athletic development is you do your sport and then you do strength. And that's kind of the thing that you do. So there's a lot of gray zone area, or blurry area in between, of becoming physically more attentive to your own body, of training your reactivity in more complex ways than doing simple strength patterns. So instead of talking about it, I would like to share another screen with a video. Let me see if I can share it. Mm. Can I share videos in the screen?
Yes, you can. Make sure that when you click the share screen button, that there's a in the bottom, there's a little share computer sound that you click that and optimize for video.
Okay, it doesn't seem to come up. Is this visible?
You can see a screen, but it's the same as before.
Is this playing?
No. Have you in the bottom of that screen of sharing, then you need to click two little.
So we have video, but not audio.
Well, the audio doesn't really matter. That's fine. Okay. I can just show it like this. Okay, so here you see, this is our gym in Antwerp, where we train our basketball academy. So here you see me entering the practice in my favorite way, which is creating one game. And based on that one game, we will develop a whole hour of practice. So here you see one of our players, Louis. I ask him to practice a jab step. So stepping in and out.
Oliver, sorry to interrupt, but we just see, I'm just seeing a picture. I don't know if anyone else sees.
It's playing now. It's playing.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
My Zoom is doing strange things. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
No worries. Good, it works. So we practice this very specific basketball movement called jab step. And I ask the players to move into the open space that I'm creating with the practice ball. And very often we practice footwork in sports with a ladder. So players are running through a ladder, tapping their feet. But if you look at how the player as a whole is moving there, is you see them looking at the floor. There is not much possibility of adding a ball into there. They're kind of cognitively lazy in there. So here they are constantly asked to be present because the ball can be swung with a long extension of the court. It can be moved faster. The player who is swinging the ball, he can observe how the other player is doing and can change it up every time that he sees that he's adapting to it. So the players, they are asked to be present throughout the game. And my role as a coach is not just to do a game and say, okay, 5 minutes this, now 5 minutes this. I start with one single game. And based on what I see in the game, so I will change the game. So here in the first ones, I saw that the players, they were looking always at the floor. And in the normal dynamics of sports, you should be able to see the space around you. You should be able to see the next player who is standing there free and asking for the ball to get a pass. So I add in a second player with a second practice ball, and he will be swinging the ball near the area of the head. So when the player gets hit in the head, he gets an immediate feedback that he's not seeing the two visual stressors. And so I change the game based on what I see. And in this way, what I notice also in the kids' eyes is that they are there. They cannot sleep for too long. They have to adapt, even though they get hit sometimes, to the tennis ball. And this is also a irritation that I see with a lot of teachers or basketball coaches, is they could be yelling for 1 hour while teaching dribbling, keep your eyes up, keep your eyes up, keep your eyes up. But here, when you get hit in the face 3 times with the ball, you probably will keep your eyes up because it's just not nice to be hit by the ball constantly. So here another game. So now they are not just doing the jab step, they're actually dribbling the ball while finding an open space in the practice ball region. And then they have to pick up a small block. And now you see that it gets a little bit more dynamic. Milan is doing really well. And what I love here is I love the presence of the kids. And I think this is one thing I want to train with them that is difficult to define, of course, is how can you teach somebody presence? You cannot really say like be present. So I have to create conditions in which presence and attentiveness to the situation that is actually there arises. And with kids, it's interesting because sometimes their attention span is not the same as the last day. And when they come from school and they had a full day and they have homework and they have some stress or something happened, sometimes I have to change the game every 2-3 minutes to keep them there. Sometimes I can do one game with small adaptations for 45 minutes. So working with kids also demands presence from me, but this is, I think, my biggest gift to them is, can I be present and see who they are on that particular day and then adapt the practice to who they are on that day. And so this is how I develop the training. Most of the time is using games. Let me go back to the presentation. And based on how they do, which concentration level I feel they have that day, I will create a setup. And throughout that hour that I have with them, or half an hour, I will be changing constantly the rules of the game, the pressures of the game. At the end of the game, for example, I used some more external pressure. They had to be looking, I would say, where is the water bottle of Senna? And they would look around and stay on the task. And at the same time, they would be looking outside where that thing is. Or I could be saying, I will be walking around and I will ask for the ball and show my hands. So you have to see both these two practice balls, and the third guy would be me. And if I ask for the ball, I want you to give it. Or I could be passing another ball, and when you don't see me coming, you will get hit in the face by the ball, maybe softly, but you will still be hit. So I want to see not so much who are you as a basketball player. I want to see a bit deeper than that. How do you move around obstacles? When do you freeze? Who is able to stay on the move? Which kind of conditions trigger you more than another one? And what is your typical way of moving with the obstacle games that I create? So I don't just want to learn my players' new moves. I want them to learn to adapt to the circumstances that I create, because that is the origin of a move. Someone once asked the Dutch player, Johan Cruyff, how he did one of those moves that he did in the game. And he didn't know, he just said it happened. It happened because it was the necessary thing to do on that moment. And that's a very popular quote in skills learning, is we don't really always learn by repeating. It is also a part of the training. But sometimes we just are so much in the game that an innovative new movement arises because we are so attuned to the defender or to the situation that is there. And then another way to say it is, I also don't just want you to be adaptive. I also want you to thrive. I want you to go where you want to go, even though there are circumstances or distractions that might limit you. So I want you to keep your orientation throughout the game, adapting and moving towards where you want to go. And in the game, this could be moving past your defender, or being able to score, or being able to give the extra pass. So I want you to go towards your aim while all these distractions are there. And I will create many of these distractions during the game, so it's more similar to the actual game of basketball. And then one other thing is, when you practice this coordination, this is another aspect of fighting monkey practice, is these basic coordinations that you see if you start to play a sports video and you put it on freeze every once in a while, you see certain positions where players come into very often. And as you start to practice the coordinations, and I will show you one in fighting monkey, you will start to see them everywhere. You will start to see, that coordination we did in that workshop or that intensive, and it looks the same to what that volleyball player is getting into now. So let me show you one that I practiced with the players some time ago. Everybody can see this video. Good. Okay. If I can press play. Okay, so this is one that we did 2 weeks ago, where I'm moving into a pattern, going, stepping back, I'm stepping forward, I'm landing in a nice position with my feet to be able to jump and then go into a jump shot. So in fighting monkey practice, in the usual workshops, we wouldn't be connecting it to the specific sport pattern so much, but this is one I did with the kids to make it some more, with some more sense to their action environment. So when you look at the back foot, to make it a bit more specific, is the placement of the back foot here. This is what we call in basketball skills training, the loaded foot. So the placement of the back ball of the foot, it allows you to push forward and propel your body forward to push again forward. But the interesting thing in sports is that unless you are doing a sprint 100 meters forward, sports is always changing direction. So that's how I want them to, that's how I want the players to be able to move their own bodies, being able to invest in that powerful push forward. And then at the same time, not overinvest so much that their upper body is moving too much over their front foot. And then when they step back, not stepping too much back, so they're not able again to move forward again. So I, with these coordinations, we create these loops of moving your body in linear, lateral, diagonal, rotational ways that are similar to the actual demands of the game. So players start to develop this kind of a sub base of athletic coordination that are in their body. So when they get in the game, they have this more rhythmical way of moving around all the things. And also when creating the games, that they are able to move their body in a way that looks a bit more free, not so stiff as I was moving in the first Fighting Monkey workshop I ever went to. So finding a way to move within their physical space in an athletic way on the court, in the space. So this for me is Joseph calls it the athletic sub base. So this kind of coordinative base that is in your body, you have it as kind of a package in your body. You are able to move very swiftly sideways, forward, stopping, and you develop this kind of this physical vocabulary, a physical literacy that will help you to have less injury in the game also, so you don't overinvest into certain positions, and also to know better what are your elastic capabilities. So if you would compare with some, like my girlfriend practices a lot of yoga, if I see her in certain positions, there it's very nice that she can reach these positions, but it is not so easy to move quickly out of that position. So she would go maybe sometimes beyond her elastic range into a range of motion that she can stretch into, but she would not be able to be athletic in that position. So if we narrow down the range a little bit more and just move a little bit outside of the demands of our sport for the way our joints would intercoordinate, then we would be able to create coordinations that look very elastic, that look like almost like an antelope would be moving on a sports court, that could drive us to be able to be more rhythmically present to the situations that are in the sports games. So these are some examples of, this was in Italy where I was teaching a group where we were starting with athletic leg basics. So athletic leg basics, it's one of the online programs of Fighting Monkey, where we start to test these very, you could say, simple squatting patterns, but go very deep into it. So how do we place our feet exactly? How do we place our back ball of the foot so our Achilles tendon is stretched enough so we can stand up again easily? And as you can see for me there, it's a bit easier than for some of the kids. And this is very fine because I want them to learn their own proportions. And in the beginning, it's awkward. Some of these squats, they will be testing your balance. And always we are working on the feet for one reason, because sports is played on the feet, the sport I'm in. And also because this develops the proprioceptive awareness in the feet. So the bottom of the foot, it's very often quite unintelligent or lazy because of constantly wearing those shoes, and the kids are sitting way more. I also noticed that their landing skills of the kids in the past 10 years, it's decreasing a lot, because I think they're not playing so much anymore. They're playing a sport and they're specializing, but these basic skills that we used to just have because we were playing as kids, they seem to be in decline a bit. So I think the individual practice part of Fighting Monkey is a good asset to work with the youth nowadays. Another one, squatting with the kids in Finland. So how do you play? How can you move your knee over your toes? How can you move forward into that squatting position that we also enter in certain coordinations and still be able to move back without blocking the back knee? So these are more detailed things that we also practice. Practicing with a partner, a bit more difficult in these times, but I hope we can start doing it again very soon, is how can you balance on that left foot while another partner is manipulating almost like a physio your leg? And so also the partner who is working your leg, he or she gets a lot of benefit from that, because it's like you go into the biology class and you say, this is a skeleton, how does it work? And you move it around. But now it's a living skeleton. It's a living partner with its own ideas and with its own balancing adequacies. So we test with each other simple manipulation work, manipulating the other's body while the other is trying to find balance, trying to keep the standing on the lower foot while the other partner is working on you. Basic coordinations. Most of the times when I work in sports, I will be starting the warm up or the beginning of the practice with a lower intensity, more being present to yourself, waking up to your body, seeing how I feel today with simple coordinations. And then slowly we will start to increase the intensity so they get ready for the next part of the training, which would be maybe more sport-specific, more basketball-specific in this domain. Here I'm coordinating with Natalia in one of the workshops, in one of the intensives, I think 2 years ago. So here you see the coordinations that we do. Sometimes they can start very simple, but soon they will be made almost undecodable, especially when Linda, wife of Joseph, makes them. She's a dance teacher and an artist. So she will still, she's very athletic, and Joseph used to be a basketball player. So this combination creates very complex coordination loops. So I would teach more of the vocabulary maybe, and they would really make sentences with these coordinations. So we would be doing different combinations, different combos. And that's another aspect within Fighting Monkey, is how do you learn? So if I was in Portugal last week and I would like to learn some Portuguese again, because I used to live there, but I completely forgot. And I noticed that I feel like from practicing Fighting Monkey coordinations and trying to decode them, that I'm more interested now in language, in the small intricacies of how the mouth is moving, how the mouth is actually coordinating with using these, learning these new words. So here we are challenged. The teacher shows a coordination and does not really describe much. It's like a Portuguese guy, can you describe to me Portuguese? He just talks and you slowly start to learn it by investing yourself into it. And very important for kids, I feel, and I have good results now with the kids that are with me for over a year or for 2-3 years, some I have for 6 years, is if I don't explain everything at once, and you are used to this from maybe the way of learning in school or the way of learning from other coaches, then you will get frustrated, or you will maybe get angry a bit at me, or you will get irritated that you don't get it immediately, or you will maybe feel a little bit awkward or a little bit shy about it, that I'm not able to get it and he can do it like that. And so this I make part of the actual practice. And this also makes me go back to the second slide I showed, the performer paradox, is where Deacon, the player that inspired me to make that slide, he sent me a message yesterday. I saw that he played a very good game. And I asked, so how was your experience of the game? What changed? Because you were able to score 31 points. So you must have felt very good. And he said that he realized that what he always used to do when he made a mistake, when he took a shot and he missed it, for example, he would say, ah, fuck. And he thought that he had to say that so the people around him, his teammates and the spectators would see that, normally he scores the shot. So he's not used to missing. That's why he's saying, fuck. That was his inner dialogue or the inner scenario that he had made. So he was able to deconstruct that and realize, well, it's not an actually good habit for me and it makes me perform less well. So I will stop saying, fuck, after missing a shot. And now he said, I was able to have much more fun. I would be able to maybe miss a shot and not care so much. So this aspect of commenting on yourself, this is also something that arises in the learning environment, but very often it is not discussed. And this is one of my own experiences also in sport, is I also used to do these things. And when I was maybe 21, 22, I started reading some behavioral psychology or some psychoanalysis work. And I started to realize I don't actually have to be consistent with past behavior if I want to change it, because it's not working so well. And this is something also so in the kids. So this is part of their notebook. So know your voice is one of the sentences in this book.
Could you stop the screen share so that we can see it better, so we can see you better?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, can you stop the screen share?
Sorry.
So we can see you better in the book.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is the book. So it's a book of about 50 pages, and some of them we actually discuss. Some of them, they are just open for them to look at and to explore. And in the book, they have this, one of the pages is, what are the top 18 tracks in your mind? Like, what are the top 18 things you're constantly repeating to yourself?
Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. So through the movement situations, I will be seeing how you adapt to the different circumstances. And at the same time, soon you will also be learning how you cope with things. What are your typical ways of dealing with the situations? I'm going to start. Should I stop at 10, by the way?
We would actually love for you to carry on a little bit.
Okay.
And then,
Yeah.
Okay. Let's don't tell Mark.
Okay, good. Okay, some more footage. This is me working with the speed tool. So this is one of the latest tools that that Fighting Monkey has created. And this is a simple, lightweight tool. It's 2.2 kilograms, which I would place in between the coordination and rhythmical practices and strength training. In between there, you could place practicing kinetic potential or exploring power movements. And in a general gym, you would see people train with kettlebells or with dumbbells, and that would be it, like heavier weights. And so this would be like the lightweight. This would be frowned upon, maybe like this is too light, you cannot do anything with this. But with this, I'm able to practice very sport specific or anthropological throwing and punching patterns with the players. Starting at age 12, we begin with two-hand movements. And then soon, when they get a bit older, they can actually do combinations of like the coordination I showed before, stepping forward, stepping back, going around their head, throwing. And I could make a loop with a couple of movements in there to also make it a bit more, you have again to stay present in that training, because the weight is only 2.2 kilograms. But if you start to create power, if you throw it a bit too far and your positioning of your upper body in relation to your feet down there is not so well placed, you will fall forward a bit. So it's also a self-corrective tool. It corrects your subtle coordinational mistakes by repeating simple movements with the pattern. So another tool in the toolbox that we use. Then another part of one of the pillars of Fighting Monkey practice in the individual practice area is zero forms. And zero forms exist of sitting, as you see here, simple sitting on the knees, standing, branching practice, which you see here, basic articulations of your joints, inspired by an old Tai Chi Kung form, and also extended a bit further by Joseph and Linda, and then the basic coordinations. And this is another aspect that I would like the players to meet without calling it anything. Basically, we just, after practice, we would sit. And of course, you want to have a long spine and you want to be able to find the space between your ankles. And there are some technical things there, but basically we just sit and we do a short moment of observational practice. So being able to just sit, and you will see the kids, they will be looking at each other. Some will be smiling and laughing and will get a little bit awkward about it. Some will be very easily settle into it, and then they will actually like it. But I want them also to be able to use this kind of practice without calling it meditation or anything really, to just change their rhythm or to give their body a signal after training, like the training is over. I'm going back into my day outside of the court. I can relax my nervous system a little bit and I don't have to be in this hunting mode anymore. Or before they go to sleep, some players come to me, coach, I'm not able to sleep so well when I have a set, when I have a day at school, and then I have to rush to eat a little bit and I have to come to the gym and I train for 2 hours. I'm still hyped when I go to sleep. What can I do? So then these are some physical awareness tools that the players can use to relax themselves or to get to know their thinking a little bit better, as some are already asking me. Sometimes the players come to the session and I have a session prepared with very dynamic things, but I see they're looking hyperactive, but they're actually super tired. So then maybe I would lie them down and I would guide them through some physical awareness ideas. I could say, can you sense the tip of your fingers? How is your shooting hand feeling compared to your other hand? Can you frown really hard and relax the frown? So we would do some very simple things to get them in their body. And soon after, maybe 10 minutes later, half of the group would be sleeping. So then I'm like, okay, my guess was right. They were not ready for hard training today, and relaxing was just as good for them today. And this is also a psychological barrier for many adults also that I work with, is I have to push myself all the time or I will not be improving. But if you push yourself constantly, you will go into, and this is a common thing we see, is you will go into a physical burnout, or you will get bored with sports. You don't want to do it anymore. So I want them rather to be most of the time very fresh. And so train as often as possible while as fresh as possible. So if they're not fresh, I will not push them, but I will try to return them to this freshness, to this to be able to breathe again, because the kids, they have a quite busy schedule. Then branching practice, this is another part of the zero forms. This is a bit more challenging, and what I like here is we bring the arms up, and arms up kind of creates a simulation for our most typical way of responding to stressors, is creating a tension somewhere. Most of us tense the shoulders up when we are a bit more tense about something, or we start to create the tension in the right knee or the left knee. So in this situation, I just stand and I maybe describe a little bit of the technicalities about it, but most of the time I don't say much and I just see how they do. And I stay for a while. I don't stay for 3 minutes. I could stay for 7 minutes, 10 minutes. With some of my guys, I can do maybe 12. And I see how they start to learn to deal with it over time. The first time, of course, it's horrible and you will make a scene and you will become dramatic about it. Like one of the guys you see there. But now I see kids that have been doing it for 2-3 years and they look different. I love it. I love to see this change when I have a very introverted guy in the beginning of the year, that he's able to open up his shoulders a little bit, or let his shoulders rest a little bit on his ribcage, or a very tough guy, like showing his chest all the time, he's able to relax his chest a bit and find more space for his breathing there. So this is a very intuitive way of, I stand, I open my arms, learn to find a place in yourself where you're able to deal with the pressures, that sometimes you are creating yourself, and try to become able to relax them and to settle a bit into yourself. And soon you will be relaxing more. You will be, your breathing will be slower maybe after the 7 minutes, or your heartbeat will be a little bit more gentle.
Wonderful, Olivier. Thank you. I just wanted to ask a quick question that somebody asked in the chat from Guy. Sure. How would you act if you face a group that won't listen to you, as kids sometimes do?
Well, of course, this happens a lot to me. I have different ways of dealing with that. So I can give you one story. So one time I was teaching a group of our kids, the group that we now have for 2 years in their first months with us. And I was explaining something, and one of the kids, he was looking at the ceiling. And I call him Fred, it's not his real name, but we have a running joke about this now. So he was looking at the ceiling, and I went to him, and he was doing this constantly. And I think it was a way of asking for attention, I don't know. So I went to him and I said, and I wanted to say, can you please listen? I'm the teacher and you have to listen. So I wanted to go into this teaching mode, but I didn't. So I went to him and he was like, his eyes opened and he looked at me and I said, you are an artist, right? And he said, what do you mean? Well, you're constantly seeing things that other people are not seeing. You're always looking around. I think you're seeing something on that roof that we are not seeing. So I want to know what it is. So you must be also having this during the day, maybe at school, where you're when the teacher is talking and you're looking outside the window and you're contemplating this nice thought and something is coming up and your fantasy is much more interesting than what is happening in the real world. You must get commented on it by the teacher. So I really went into it. So I become present to that guy. And we had a discussion after the training about it. He's like, he was 13 years old. So it was very spontaneous, very funny. But he was astonished that I would say that, so that I would not respond in a typical way of, can you please listen and use my teaching voice? So that's one way. And of course, that was that guy. Then there is another guy who I wrestle with him very often. And I know that he's a child of a single mom, so he maybe doesn't have this male attention in a certain way in his family. So instead of disciplining him, I would wrestle with him, and then after a couple of minutes, it's like he respects me more, or we connected in a very physical way. So I feel creating connection, and that's a big part of the beginning of the practice that I try to do, is creating an attunement with the players from the beginning, showing that I try to see them really. And this is, of course, something that builds over time.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Olivier, also for being, it was good flying monkey practice, how to get on this call, right?
Yeah, well, sorry.
No, I'm sorry too. I mean, it was a mishap both ways, and we fixed it. So
very good.
I'm so glad. Thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Can you stop the screen share for a minute?
Yeah,
I would love to share, which we didn't get to do in the beginning of the call, our sponsor's video for this channel, and then I would love to give a final word to you as well.
Yeah.
And if you want, you can, I have a website for you. Is that the oliviergoedgeluk.com? Is that your website?
Yeah.
So I can find you.
I wanted to share two. So I have one for my, maybe I can share the screen for one more second.
Sure. Yeah.
You can still see it?
Can you just type it in the chat? Would that be okay, Olivier? And then I start the little...
Yeah, sure. So...
Yeah, thank you.
If you want to learn more about my way of teaching in basketball, we have a website, Elite Athletes Online, where you can join our basketball development program. And there, if you use the code EC2020, you get 15% off. And if you want to follow my personal work, there you can follow me at my name, olivierhutili.com. And yeah, there you can connect with my writing, maybe my personal teaching. And yeah, that's about it.
Wonderful.
Okay.
The embodied experience of our world, regardless of our differences, and we have them. We all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilhedley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses, because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
Wonderful. So, thank you for sharing that again, Olivier. I didn't get the link that you wanted to share. Put that in the chat for us,
yeah,
please.
Put it there. So it's eliteathletesonline.com.
Oh, lovely, great. I was elsewhere with my brain. I've got a few other little things to share. These are ways to engage in this conference. So there's a coffee break room open right now if you want to have a chat afterwards with coffee. Good morning. You can join the Facebook group. There is a very lively discussion over there. And there are ways to upgrade so that you can watch this whole presentation and all the others in this channel and other channels at your leisure. Mm-hmm. Second language showing. Okay. And another, I wanted to ask you for one last thing, actually, Olivier. So if there was one way that people could, according to you, integrate embodiment into their practices, what's your top tip?
Your top tip? I would say that we often say learn to listen to your body. For me, that's how you do that. I think this conference is doing a really good job at showing many ways to be able to do that. So I would say find a way that helps you to every day check in or have a meeting with yourself in a way that you can stay consistent and not create another training program paradigm around it, but very simple things like sitting, standing, lying on the floor, doing very simple movements and day by day checking how you are doing. So that's something I would say that's become a basic activity in each day for me, a basic grounding moment or basic checking moment. See how I'm doing.
Very right, yes. Thank you so much. Thank you everybody that was here.